This podcast was produced at Red Hat and is distributed under a Creative Commons license. We hope you enjoy this presentation and share it with others.
Hi, Chris. This is Deborah here at Red Hat Magazine, and I was giving you a call to talk to you about your experience at FISLE 2006 when you were in Brazil.
Okay.
There was a thing that I was really interested in. I noticed they have different terminology than we use here in the States, and I've read that it's more software libre, and we use the terms open source. Can you talk about the difference in those terminologies?
Well, sure. Software libre is really a metaphor or a different way of just saying software freedom. I think in the certainly North America and Europe, we do spend a lot of time talking about software freedom, but the term open source, I think, took over because it's more commercially viable, and also because, you know, freedom in English is really an overloaded term. It can mean freeze in cost. It can mean freeze in freedom. You know, a lot of people say freeze in beer, freeze in speech, but most people don't really spend time thinking about the difference. They have a more sort of subtle approach to it down there. I mean, software freedom does focus on software licenses that require, you know, the recipients to participate by returning source code to other users of their code. Open source really just means that you do have access to the code. So they really have a sort of a different mindset than we do. I think maybe because they're more open to it, or, you know, it's not entirely clear to me why that took over as opposed to open source in sort of the classic Western world. But it's also sort of a little bit of a mindset. You know, they do focus on freedom first and not necessarily the actual source code, which is probably, I think, a better way to look at what we do in the free software world.
How do you think that this different mindset will affect collaboration?
Well, I mean, it sets it up to succeed. You know, you can't have collaboration without freedom. That's a simple tenet that I think everybody would agree on. That's basically it.
Would you like to talk a little bit about the open source culture you experienced while you were at the conference?
Sure. I mean, this is my first trip down there, and certainly quite an awakening. It's one of certainly the largest conference I've ever seen, and it is reported to be the largest conference in the world. I think they had several thousand participants. It's pretty amazing. There's lots of people with a huge amount of passion and a huge amount of interest. You know, I can compare and contrast that with, you know, I compare and contrast that with India, which I also got to go to this year and go to at least one conference. Brazil, I would say, I'll talk about India for a second. India seems to have a very large user community for open source, but they don't have, proportionate to the size of their population and the size of their user community, they don't have a huge developer community.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say they don't have one. It's not just not, doesn't seem to scale up as high. Brazil and South America seem to have a very vibrant, very interesting contributor community. You know, they seem to understand the importance of the collaboration aspect to it and being able to participate. So, I mean, it was a huge experience. It was really an eye-opener to show what happens when you have a very committed group of individuals in a country.
So what was a typical day like there? Were there literally thousands of people within one place, or did they hold it across different buildings?
Yeah, they held it in one huge conference center. I mean, it was just thousands and thousands of people walking around, looking at various exhibits, having conversations, going to talks, sort of different. In the States, we tend to have these dichotomies. We have two conferences. We have one that is, or we have a conference, and then we have a trade show, and this is really a mix of both of them. So you had vendors, and you had, you know, Richard Stallman to come in and talk about GPLv3 and, you know, a bunch of different sort of things that would appeal to a wide community. So they had a huge, huge turnout.
Were they talking both Portuguese and English and other languages? Or
yeah, I don't speak Portuguese, so I went to a couple of the English conferences, but it was sort of interesting to sit and listen to the Portuguese conferences too, because, you know, you could pick out some of the words, because those are common between the two languages. But they definitely had two multiple languages for different sorts of conferences or different talks.
What did you think were the most prominent discussions across that particular conference?
They spent a lot of time talking about licensing. They spent a lot of time talking about various technologies and the things that people are working on. I think that the only difference between the conference aspect of that particular conference and, you know, what you see in North America was language. That's about it. I mean, you know, they really are integrated with the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the common themes, you know, technology, licensing, freedom. You know, you get a decent amount of cross-pollination as well, but it was pretty good. It was good.
What do you think drives the need for open source technology and solutions in Brazil?
That's a complicated question. I think a lot of it is politics. Part of it is practical. I think countries like Brazil and many other Latin American countries, for that matter, seem to have a really important psychological need to make sure that they're part of the equation. Open source technology and free software in particular, something that they can absolutely participate in it. You know, if you go and you look at a Microsoft solution, I think they can rightfully say that it's imported from a U.S. company, right? It's something they have to import. But that's a very, you know, that's in direct contrast with the way that open source and free software developed. You know, it's a global effort. Anyone can participate. All you have to do is show up at the table. So it's really nice because you get the excellent aspects of globalization, that is trade and working with other countries, but you can still build a local software economy on top of it as well. So I think that, you know, it appeals to them because of that mentality.
Do you think Brazil's move to Java in the 1990s hindered, or do you think it helped the open source adoption?
The answer there is pretty mixed. I think in the sense that it helped the way it move away from Microsoft as a base technology has helped.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, they've replaced one proprietary platform with another proprietary platform, and it's been a huge hindrance. Java is not free software. And there are efforts to build a Java-compatible VM that is free software, but they've gotten, you know, 90% of the way there, but they haven't reached that last 10%. So we'll see more progress in that regard, and maybe we'll be able to free up that software. And, of course, Sun always makes noises about open sourcing Java, but, you know, until I actually see action, I don't believe it. So we'll see.
Did you notice the influence of economy in Latin America and how that will drive the open source adoption?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
The economy of a developing country as opposed to our economy, when we spend a lot more money on proprietary software because we have ability to do that, whereas in developing countries, their economic status doesn't allow them to try those other solutions.
Yeah, there's actually some interesting aspects to that. It seems that in Brazil, you know, I would actually suggest that it seems that there's a much stronger entrepreneurial aspect to the local economy. You know, anybody can jump in and start a business, and I see a lot of that around open source, because anybody can participate, right? Anybody can set up a consulting company. Anybody is allowed to, you know, redistribute the software and provide services along with it. So it provides an excellent opportunity to build businesses and build a local economy around it. I think it is a very different mentality than you see in the Western world, where, you know, you have to build a huge amount of capital to be able to, you know, start a software company, it seems, these days. And it's much easier to get started, I think, down there and provide local services.
In February, the UN recommended open source software
mm-hmm.
for all its members, particularly in the areas of health, education, and international commerce. And I think on Latin America, particularly countries like Brazil and Venezuela, are in the process of migrating all their applications into the public entities from proprietary software to open source. Did
yeah.
you hear a lot of discussions about that movement while you were there?
Some. I think there were actually some government officials there talking about it. I mean, I would love to see them moving because it's better for them, not necessarily because they're legislated to do so.
Yeah.
I think that that's an important, you know, I'm a big believer in freedom, and not just in the sense of software, but also personal freedoms as well.
Yeah.
I think that they have a commitment to keeping transparency as part of their government, the way that their government works, because that's how you build a successful government. And, you know, they're still evolving, and they still have transitions to go through. So I think, you know, free software and open source software are natural fits for that sort of phenomena.
And where do you think Red Hat is in all this?
Well, I mean, Red Hat did make a pretty dramatic move into South America very recently. You know, we purchased an entity that we've been working with closely for a very long time. You know, they had set up their own support systems and their own sales organization. And, you know, what Red Hat gets out of that is we get local expertise, local information on the markets. Basically, what it means is that Red Hat has a committed presence on that continent, and that everybody in South America can take advantage of all of our products and services. But at the same time, you know, that's the sort of sales pitch. I think what it means is that Red Hat is able to participate in the entire global market of free software and open source software, and not just on the marketing and sales side, but also on the development and working to create a sort of global movement that is around free software and open source software.
Which is at the essence of Red Hat.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you have anything else you wanted to share about the conference or your trip to Brazil?
Just that it was my first time to Brazil, and I had a great time, and I appreciate all the local people who showed me around, and I'll come back next year for sure.
Yeah, I can hardly wait to go. It's on my list for next trip.
Good, good.
It's been really great talking to you.
Yep.
Thanks for the interview.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The podcast you have just heard is distributed under version 2.5 of the Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works Creative Commons license. For more on this license, see creativecommons.org. For more podcasts and further information on Red Hat, visit redhat.com. Thanks for listening.